The Return of the King, Disc 5.
Chapter 6. The Battle of the Pelennor Fields. But it was no orc chieftain or brigand that led the assault upon Gondor. The darkness was breaking too soon, before the date that his master had set for it. Fortune had betrayed him for the moment, and the world had turned against him. Victory was slipping from his grasp, even as he stretched out his hand to seize it. But his arm was long. He was still in command, wielding great powers. King, Ringwraith, Lord of the Nazgul, he had many weapons. He left the gate and vanished. Theoden, King of the Mark, had reached the road from the gate to the river, and he turned towards the city that was now less than a mile distant. He slackened his speed a little, seeking new foes, and his knights came about him, and Daernhelm was with them. Ahead, near the walls, Elfhelm's men were among the siege engines, hewing, slaying, driving their foes into the fire pits. Well nigh all the northern half of the Pelennor was overrun, and their camps were blazing. Orcs were flying towards the river like herds before the hunters, and the Rohirrim went hither and thither at their will. But they had not yet overthrown the siege, nor won the gate. Many foes stood before it, and on the further half of the plain were other hosts, still unfought. Southward beyond the road lay the main force of the Haradrim, and there their horsemen were gathered about the standard of their chieftain. And he looked out, and in the growing light he saw the banner of the king, and that it was far ahead of the battle with few men about it. Then he was filled with a red wrath, and shouted aloud, and displaying his standard, black serpent upon scarlet, he came against the white horse and the green with great press of men, and the drawing of the scimitars of the Southrons was like a glitter of stars. Then Theoden was aware of him, and would not wait for his onset. But crying to Snowmane, he charged headlong to greet him. Great was the clash of their meeting, but the white fury of the Northmen burned the hotter, and more skilled was their knighthood with long spears and bitter. Fewer were they, but they clove through the Southrons like a firebolt in a forest. Right through the press drove Theoden, Thingol's son, and his spear was shivered as he threw down their chieftain. Out swept his sword, and he spurred to the standard, hewed staff and bearer, and the black serpent foundered. Then all that was left unslain of their cavalry turned and fled far away. But lo! Suddenly in the midst of the glory of the king his golden shield was dimmed. The new morning was blotted from the sky. Dark fell about him. Horses reared and screamed. Men cast from the saddle lay grovelling on the ground.
"To me! To me!" cried Theoden. "Up, Eorlingus! Fear no darkness!"
But Snowmane, wild with terror, stood up on high, fighting with the air, and then with a great scream he crashed upon his side. A black dart had pierced him. The king fell beneath him. The great shadow descended like a falling cloud, and behold, it was a winged creature. If bird, then greater than all other birds, and it was naked, and neither quill nor feather did it bear, and its vast pinions were as webs of hide between horned fingers, and it stank. A creature of an older world, maybe it was, whose kind, lingering in forgotten mountains, cold beneath the moon, outstayed their day, and in hideous aerie bred this last untimely brood, apt to evil. And the Dark Lord took it, and nursed it with fell meats, until it grew beyond the measure of all other things that fly, and he gave it to his servant to be his steed. Down, down it came, and then, folding its fingered webs, it gave a croaking cry, and settled upon the body of Snowmane, digging in its claws, stooping its long, naked neck. Upon it sat a shape, black-mantled, huge and threatening. A crown of steel he bore, but between rim and robe naught was there to see, save only a deadly gleam of eyes. The Lord of the Nazgul. To the air he had returned, summoning his steed ere the darkness failed, and now he was come again, bringing ruin, turning hope to despair, and victory to death. A great black mace he wielded. But Theoden was not utterly forsaken. The knights of his house lay slain about him, or else, mastered by the madness of their steeds, were borne far away. Yet one stood there still. Dernhelm the young, faithful beyond fear, and he wept, for he had loved his lord as a father. Right through the charge, Merry had been borne unharmed behind him, until the shadow came, and then Windfaller had thrown them in his terror, and now ran wild upon the plain. Merry crawled on all fours like a dazed beast, and such a horror was on him that he was blind and sick. "King's man, King's man," his heart cried within him, "you must stay by him. As a father you shall be to me," you said. But his will made no answer, and his body shook. He dared not open his eyes or look up. Then out of the blackness in his mind he thought that he heard Dernhelm speaking. Yet now the voice seemed strange, recalling some other voice that he had known. "Begone, foul Dwimmerlaik, lord of Carrion, leave the dead in peace." A cold voice answered, "Come not between the Nazgul and his prey, or he will not slay thee in thy turn. He will bear thee away to the houses of lamentation beyond all darkness, where thy flesh shall be devoured, and thy shrivelled mind be left naked to the lidless eye." A sword rang as it was drawn. "Do what you will, but I will hinder it, if I may."
"Hinder me, thou fool! No living man may hinder me."
Then Merry heard of all sounds in that hour the strangest. It seemed that Dernhelm laughed, and the clear voice was like the ring of steel. "But no living man am I. You look upon a woman. Eowyn I am, Eomund's daughter. You stand between me and my lord and kin. Begone, if you be not deathless, for living or dark undead, I will smite you if you touch him." The winged creature screamed at her, but the ring-wraith made no answer, and was silent, as if in sudden doubt. Very amazement for a moment conquered Merry's fear. He opened his eyes, and the blackness was lifted from them. There, some paces from him, sat the great beast, and all seemed dark about it, and above it loomed the Nazgul lord like a shadow of despair. A little to the left, facing them, stood she whom he had called Dernhelm. But the helm of her secrecy had fallen from her, and her bright hair, released from its bonds, gleamed with pale gold upon her shoulders. Her eyes, grey as the sea, were hard and fell, and yet tears were on her cheek. A sword was in her hand, and she raised her shield against the horror of her enemy's eyes. Eowyn it was, and Dernhelm also. For into Merry's mind flashed the memory of the face that he saw at the riding from Dunharrow. The face of one that goes seeking death, having no hope. Pity filled his heart, and great wonder, and suddenly the slow kindled courage of his race awoke. He clenched his hand. She should not die, so fair, so desperate. At least she should not die alone, unaided. The face of their enemy was not turned towards him, but still he hardly dared to move, dreading lest the deadly eyes should fall on him. Slowly, slowly he began to crawl aside, but the black captain, in doubt and malice intent upon the woman before him, heeded him no more than a worm in the mud. Suddenly the great beast beat its hideous wings, and the wind of them was foul. Again it leapt into the air, and then swiftly fell down upon Eowyn, shrieking, striking with beak and claw. Still she did not blench. Maiden of the Rohirrim, child of kings, slender but as a steel blade, fair but terrible. A swift stroke she dealt, skilled and deadly. The outstretched neck she clove asunder, and the hewn head fell like a stone. Backward she sprang, as the huge shape crashed to ruin, vast wings outspread, crumpled on the earth, and with its fall the shadow passed away. A light fell about her, and her hair shone in the sunrise. Out of the wreck rose the black rider, tall and threatening, towering above her. With a cry of hatred that stung the very ears like venom, he let fall his mace. Her shield was shivered in many places, and her arm was broken. She stumbled to her knees. He bent over her like a cloud, and his eyes glittered. He raised his mace to kill. But suddenly he too stumbled forward with a cry of bitter pain, and his stroke went wide, driving into the ground. Mary's sword had stabbed him from behind, shearing through the black mantle, and passing up beneath the hauberk, had pierced the sinew behind his mighty knee. "Eowyn! Eowyn!" cried Mary. Then, tottering, struggling up, with her last strength she drove her sword between crown and mantle as the great shoulders bowed before her. The sword broke sparkling into many shards. The crown rolled away with a clang. Eowyn fell forward upon her fallen foe. But lo! The mantle and hauberk were empty. Shapeless they lay now on the ground, torn and tumbled, and a cry went up into the shuddering air, and faded to a shrill wailing, passing with the wind, a voice bodiless and thin that died, and was swallowed up, and was never heard again in that age of this world. And there stood Meriadoc the hobbit in the midst of the slain, blinking like an owl in the daylight, for tears blinded him. And through a mist he looked on Eowyn's fair head, as she lay and did not move. And he looked on the face of the king, fallen in the midst of his glory. For Snowmane in his agony had rolled away from him again, yet he was the bane of his master. Then Merry stooped and lifted his hand to kiss it, and lo! Theoden opened his eyes, and they were clear, and he spoke in a quiet voice, though laboured. "Farewell, Master Hallbitler," he said. "My body is broken. I go to my father's, and even in their mighty company I shall not now be ashamed. I felled the black serpent, a grim morn, and a glad day, and a golden sunset." Merry could not speak, but wept anew. "Forgive me, Lord," he said at last, "if I broke your command, and yet have done no more in your service than to weep at our parting." The old king smiled. "Grieve not, it is forgiven. Great heart will not be denied. Live now in blessedness, and when you sit in peace with your pipe, think of me. For never now shall I sit with you in Meadowseld, as I promised, or listen to your herb lore." He closed his eyes, and Merry bowed beside him. Presently he spoke again. "Where is Eomer? For my eyes darken, and I would see him ere I go. He must be king after me, and I would send word to Eowyn. She would not have me leave her, and now I shall not see her again, dearer than daughter." "Lord, Lord," began Merry brokenly, "she is—" But at that moment there was a great clamour, and all about them horns and trumpets were blowing. Merry looked round. He had forgotten the war, and all the world beside, and many hours it seemed since the king rode to his fall, though in truth it was only a little while. But now he saw that they were in danger of being caught in the very midst of the great battle that would soon be joined. New forces of the enemy were hastening up the road from the river, and from under the walls came the legions of Morgul, and from the southward fields came footmen of Harad, with horsemen before them, and behind them rose the huge backs of the Mumakil, with war towers upon them. But northward the white crest of Eomer led the great front of the Rohirrim, which he had again gathered and marshalled, and out of the city came all the strength of men that was in it. And the silver swan of Dal Amroth was borne in the van, driving the enemy from the gate. For a moment the thought flitted through Merry's mind, "Where is Gandalf? Isn't he here? Could he not have saved the king and Eowyn?" But thereupon Eomer rode up in haste, and with him came the knights of the household that still lived and had now mastered their horses. They looked in wonder at the carcass of the fell beast that lay there, and their steeds would not go near. But Eomer leapt from the saddle, and grief and dismay fell upon him as he came to the king's side and stood there in silence. Then one of the knights took the king's banner from the hand of Guthlaf, the banner-bearer who lay dead, and he lifted it up. Slowly Théoden opened his eyes. Seeing the banner, he made a sign that it should be given to Eomer.
"Hail, King of the Mark," he said. "Ride now to victory. Bid Eowyn farewell." And so he died, and knew not that Eowyn lay near him. And those who stood by wept, crying, "Théoden King! Théoden King!" But Eomer said to them, "Mourn not overmuch. Mighty was the fallen. Meet was his ending. When his mound is raised, women then shall weep. War now calls us." Yet he himself wept as he spoke. "Let his knights remain here," he said, "and bear his body in honour from the field, lest the battle ride over it. Yea, and all these other of the king's men that lie here." And he looked at the slain, recalling their names. Then suddenly he beheld his sister Eowyn as she lay, and he knew her. He stood a moment as a man who is pierced in the midst of a cry by an arrow through the heart. And then his face went deathly white, and a cold fury rose in him, so that all speech failed him for a while. A fey mood took him. "Eowyn! Eowyn!" he cried at last. "Eowyn! How come you here? What madness or devilry is this? Death! 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 Death take us all!"
Then, without taking counsel or waiting for the approach of the men of the city, he spurred headlong back to the front of the great host, and blew a horn, and cried aloud for the onset. Over the field rang his clear voice, calling, "Death! Ride! Ride to ruin and the world's ending!" And with that the host began to move. But the Rohirrim sang no more. "Death!" they cried with one voice loud and terrible, and gathering speed like a great tide, their battle swept about their fallen king and passed, roaring away southwards. And still Meriadoc the hobbit stood there blinking through his tears, and no one spoke to him. Indeed, none seemed to heed him. He brushed away the tears, and stooped to pick up the green shield that Eowyn had given him, and he slung it at his back. Then he looked for his sword that he had let fall. For even as he struck his blow his arm was numbed, and now he could only use his left hand. And behold, there lay his weapon, but the blade was smoking like a dry branch that has been thrust in a fire, and as he watched it, it writhed and withered and was consumed. So passed the sword of the Barrow-downs, work of Westerness. But glad would he have been to know its fate, who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom when the Dúnedain were young, and chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. Men now raised the king, and laying cloaks upon spear truncheons, they made shift to bear him away towards the city. And others lifted Eowyn gently up and bore her after him. But the men of the king's household they could not yet bring from the field, for seven of the king's knights had fallen there, and Deawine, their chief, was among them. So they laid them apart from their foes and the fell beast, and set spears about them. And afterwards, when all was over, men returned and made a fire there, and burned the carcass of the beast. But for Snowmane they dug a grave and set up a stone, upon which was carved in the tongues of Gondor and the mark: "Faithful servant, yet master's bane, Lightfoot's foal, swift Snowmane." Green and long grew the grass on Snowmane's how, but ever black and bare was the ground where the beast was burned. Now slowly and sadly Merry walked beside the bearers, and he gave no more heed to the battle. He was weary and full of pain, and trembled as with a chill. A great rain came out of the sea, and it seemed that all things wept for Théoden and Éowyn, quenching the fires in the city with grey tears. It was through a mist that presently he saw the van of the men of Gondor approaching. Imrahil, prince of Dol Amroth, rode up and drew rein before them. "What burden do you bear, men of Rohan?" he cried. "Théoden, king," they answered. "He is dead. But Éomé, king, now rides in the battle, he with a white crest in the wind." Then the prince went from his horse and knelt by the bier in honour of the king and his great onset, and he wept. And rising, he looked then on Éowyn and was amazed. "Surely here is a woman," he said. "Have even the women of the Rohirrim come to war in our need?" "Nay, one only," they answered. "The lady Éowyn is she, sister of Éomer, and we knew naught of her riding until this hour, and greatly we rue it." Then the prince, seeing her beauty, though her face was pale and cold, touched her hand as he bent to look more closely on her. "Men of Rohan," he cried, "are there no leeches among you? She is hurt, to the death maybe, but I deem that she yet lives." And he held the bright burnished vambrace that was upon his arm before her cold lips, and behold, a little mist was laid on it, hardly to be seen. "Haste is now needed," he said, and he sent one riding back swiftly to the city to bring aid. But he, bowing low to the fallen, bade them farewell, and mounting, rode away into battle. And now the fighting waxed furious on the fields of the Pelennor, and the din of arms rose upon high, with the crying of men and the neighing of horses. Horns were blown, and trumpets were braying, and the Mumakil were bellowing as they were goaded to war. Under the south walls of the city, the footmen of Gondor now drove against the legions of Morgul that were still gathered there in strength. But the horsemen rode eastward to the succour of Éomer. Húrin the Tall, Warden of the Keys, and the Lord of Lasarnach, and Hirluin of the Green Hills, and Prince Imrahil the Fair, with his knights all about him. Not too soon came their aid to the Rohirrim, for fortune had turned against Éomer, and his fury had betrayed him. The great wrath of his onslaught had utterly overthrown the front of his enemies, and great wedges of his riders had passed clear through the ranks of the Southrons, discomfiting their horsemen and riding their footmen to ruin. But wherever the Mumakil came there, the horses would not go, but blenched and swerved away, and the great monsters were unfought, and stood like towers of defence, and the Haradrim rallied about them. And if the Rohirrim at their onset were thrice outnumbered by the Haradrim alone, soon their case became worse, for new strength came streaming to the field out of Osgiliath. There they had been mustered for the sack of the city and the rape of Gondor, waiting on the call of their captain. He now was destroyed, but Gothmog, the lieutenant of Morgul, had flung them into the fray. Easterlings with axes, and Variags of Khand, Southrons in scarlet, and out of far Harad, black men like half-trolls with white eyes and red tongues. Some now hastened up behind the Rohirrim, others held westward to hold off the forces of Gondor and prevent their joining with Rohan. It was even as the day thus began to turn against Gondor, and their hope wavered, that a new cry went up in the city. It being then mid-morning, and a great wind blowing, and the rain flying north, and the sun shining. In that clear air watchmen on the walls saw afar a new sight of fear, and their last hope left them. For Anduin, from the bend at the Harlond, so flowed that from the city men could look down it lengthwise for some leagues, and the far-sighted could see any ships that approached. And looking thither they cried in dismay, for black against the glittering stream they beheld a fleet borne up on the wind. Dromunds, and ships of great draught with many oars, and with black sails bellying in the breeze. "The corsairs of Umbar!" men shouted. "The corsairs of Umbar! Look! The corsairs of Umbar are coming! So Belfalus is taken, and the Aethir, and Lebenin is gone. The corsairs are upon us. It is the last stroke of doom." And some without order, for none could be found to command them in the city, ran to the bells and told the alarm, and some blew the trumpet, sounding the retreat. "Back to the walls!" they cried. "Back to the walls! Come back to the city before all are overwhelmed!" But the wind that sped the ships blew all their clamour away. The Rohirrim indeed had no need of news or alarm. All too well they could see for themselves the black sails. For Éomer was now scarcely a mile from the Harlond, and a great press of his foes was between him and the haven there, while new foes came swirling behind, cutting him off from the prince. Now he looked to the river, and hope died in his heart, and the wind that he had blessed he now called accursed. But the hosts of Mordor were enheartened, and filled with a new lust and fury they came yelling to the onset. Stern now was Éomer's mood, and his mind clear again. He let blow the horns to rally all men to his banner that could come thither, for he thought to make a great shield-wall at the last, and stand, and fight there on foot till all fell, and do deeds of song on the fields of Pelennor, though no man should be left in the west to remember the last king of the Mark. So he rode to a green hillock, and there set his banner, and the white horse ran rippling in the wind. "Out of doubt, out of dark to the day's rising, I came singing in the sun, sword unsheathing. To hope's end I rode, and to heart's breaking. Now for wrath, now for ruin and a red nightfall." These staves he spoke, yet he laughed as he said them, for once more lust of battle was on him, and he was still unscathed, and he was young, and he was king, the lord of a fell people. And lo, even as he laughed at despair, he looked out again on the black ships, and he lifted up his sword to defy them. And then wonder took him, and a great joy, and he cast his sword up in the sunlight and sang as he caught it. And all eyes followed his gaze, and behold, upon the foremost ship a great standard broke, and the wind displayed it as she turned towards the Harlond. There flowered a white tree, and that was for Gondor. But seven stars were about it, and a high crown above it, the signs of Elendil that no lord had borne for years beyond count. And the stars flamed in the sunlight, for they were wrought of gems by Arwen, daughter of Elrond, and the crown was bright in the morning, for it was wrought of mithril and gold. Thus came Aragorn, son of Arathorn, Elessar, Isildur's heir, out of the paths of the dead, born upon a wind from the sea to the kingdom of Gondor, and the mirth of the Rohirrim was a torrent of laughter and a flashing of swords, and the joy and wonder of the city was a music of trumpets and a ringing of bells. But the hosts of Mordor were seized with bewilderment, and a great wizardry it seemed to them that their own ship should be filled with their foes, and a black dread fell on them, knowing that the tides of fate had turned against them, and their doom was at hand. East rode the knights of Dol Amroth, driving the enemy before them, trollmen and variags and orcs that hated the sunlight. South strode Éomer, and men fled before his face, and they were caught between the hammer and the anvil. for now men leapt from the ships to the quays of the Harland and swept north like a storm. There came Legolas, and Gimli wielding his axe, and Halbarad with a standard, and Eladan and Elrohir with stars on their brow, and the door-handed Dunedain, rangers of the north, leading a great valour of the folk of Lebennin and Lamedon and the fiefs of the south. But before all went Aragorn with a flame of the west, Andúril like a new fire kindled, Narsil reforged as deadly as of old, and upon his brow was the star of Elendil. And so at length Éomer and Aragorn met in the midst of the battle, and they leaned on their swords and looked on one another and were glad.
"Thus we meet again, though all the hosts of Mordor lay between us," said Aragorn. "Did I not say so at the Hornburg?"
"So you spoke," said Éomer, "but hope oft deceives, and I knew not then that you were a man foresighted. Yet twice blessed is help unlooked for, and never was a meeting of friends more joyful." And they clasped hand in hand.
"Nor indeed more timely," said Éomer. "You come none too soon, my friend. Much loss and sorrow has befallen us."
"Then let us avenge it, ere we speak of it," said Aragorn, and they rode back to battle together.
Hard fighting and long labour they had still, for the Southrons were bold men and grim, and fierce in despair, and the Easterlings were strong and war-hardened and asked for no quarter. And so in this place and that, by burned homestead or barn, upon hillock or mound, under wall or on field, still they gathered and rallied and fought until the day wore away. Then the sun went at last behind Myndolwyn, and filled all the sky with a great burning, so that the hills and the mountains were dyed as with blood. Fire glowed in the river, and the grass of the Pelennor lay red in the nightfall. And in that hour the great battle of the field of Gondor was over, and not one living foe was left within the circuit of the Ramas. All were slain save those who fled to die or to drown in the red foam of the river. Few ever came eastward to Morgul or Mordor, and to the land of the Haradrim came only a tale from far off, a rumour of the wrath and terror of Gondor. Aragorn and Éomer and Imrahil rode back towards the gate of the city, and they were now weary beyond joy or sorrow. These three were unscathed, for such was their fortune and the skill and might of their arms, and few indeed had dared to abide them or look on their faces in the hour of their wrath. But many others were hurt or maimed or dead upon the field. The axes hewed Forlong as he fought alone and unhorsed, and both Duelin of Morthond and his brother were trampled to death when they assailed the Mumakil, leading their bowmen close to shoot at the eyes of the monsters. Neither Heorluin the Fair would return to Pinnath Gelin, nor Grimbold to Grimslade, nor Halbarad to the Northlands, Dur-handed ranger. No few had fallen, renowned or nameless, captain or soldier. For it was a great battle, and the full count of it no tale has told. So long afterward a maker in Rohan said in his song of the mounds of Munberg,
"We heard of the horns in the hills ringing, the sword shining in the south kingdom, steeds went striding to the stoning land as wind in the morning. War was kindled, there Theoden fell, Thangling mighty, to his golden halls and green pastures in the northern fields, never returning, High Lord of the Host. Harding and Guthlaf, Dunhir and Deowyn, Doughty Grimbold, Herefara, and Herobrand, Horn and Fastred, fought and fell there in a far country, In the mounds of Mondberg under mould they lie, with their league fellows, lords of Gondor. Neither Hirluin the fair to the hills by the sea, nor Furlong the old to the flowering vales, ever to Arnach, to his own country, returned in triumph, nor the tall bowmen, Derofin and Duilin, to their dark waters, meres of Morthond, under mountain shadows. Death in the morning, and at day's ending, lords took and lowly, long now they sleep. Under grass in Gondor, by the great river, grey now as tears, gleaming silver, red then it rolled, roaring water, foam dyed with blood, flamed at sunset. As beacons mountains burned at evening, red fell the dew in Ramasehor.
Chapter 7. The Pyre of Denethor. When the dark shadow at the gate withdrew, Gandalf still sat motionless. But Pippin rose to his feet, as if a great weight had been lifted from him, and he stood listening to the horns, and it seemed to him that they would break his heart with joy. And never in after years could he hear a horn blown in the distance without tears starting in his eyes. But now suddenly his errand returned to his memory, and he ran forward. At that moment Gandalf stirred and spoke to Shadowfax, and was about to ride through the gate.
"Gandalf! Gandalf!" cried Pippin,
and Shadowfax halted.
"What are you doing here?" said Gandalf. "Is it not a law in the city that those who wear the black and silver must stay in the citadel unless their lord gives them leave?"
"He has," said Pippin. "He sent me away. But I'm frightened. Something terrible may happen up there. The lord is out of his mind, I think. I'm afraid he'll kill himself and kill Faramir, too. Can't you do something?" Gandalf looked through the gaping gate, and already on the fields he heard the gathering sound of battle. He clenched his hand.
"I must go," he said. "The Black Rider is abroad, and he will yet bring ruin on us. I have no time."
"But Faramir!" cried Pippin. "He's not dead, and they'll burn him alive if someone doesn't stop them."
"Burn him alive?" said Gandalf. "What is this tale? Be quick!"
"Denethor has gone to the tombs," said Pippin. "And he's taken Faramir, and he says we're all to burn, and he'll not wait, and they are to make a pyre and burn him on it, and Faramir as well. And he's sent men to fetch wood and oil. And I've told Beregond, but I'm afraid he won't dare to leave his post. He's on guard. And what can he do anyway?"
So Pippin poured out his tale, reaching up and touching Gandalf's knee with trembling hands.
"Can't you save Faramir?"
"Maybe I can," said Gandalf. "But if I do, then others will die, I fear. Well, I must come, since no other help can reach him. But evil and sorrow will come of this. Even in the heart of our stronghold, the enemy has power to strike us. For his will it is that is at work."
Then, having made up his mind, he acted swiftly. And catching up Pippin and setting him before him, he turned Shadowfax with a word. The climbing streets of Minas Tirith they clattered, while the noise of war rose behind them. Everywhere men were rising from their despair and dread, seizing their weapons, crying one to another, "Rohan has come!" Captains were shouting, companies were mustering, many already were marching down to the gate. They met the Prince Imrahil, and he called to them,
"Whither now, Mithrandir? The Rohirrim are fighting on the fields of Gondor. We must gather all the strength that we can find." "You will need every man and more," said Gandalf. "Make all haste. I'll come when I can. But I have an errand to the Lord Denethor that will not wait. Take command of the Lord's absence."
They passed on. And as they climbed and drew near to the citadel, they felt the wind blowing in their faces, and they caught the glimmer of morning far away, a light growing in the southern sky. But it brought little hope to them, not knowing what evil lay before them, fearing to come too late.
"Darkness is passing," said Gandalf, "but it still lies heavy on this city."
At the gate of the citadel they found no guard.
"Then Beregond has gone," said Pippin more hopefully.
They turned away and hastened along the road to the closed door. It stood wide open, and the porter lay before it. He was slain, and his key had been taken.
"Work of the enemy," said Gandalf. "Such deeds he loves. Friend at war with friend, loyalty divided in confusion of hearts."
Now he dismounted, and bade Shadowfax return to his stable.
"For, my friend," he said, "you and I should have ridden to the fields long ago, but other matters delay me. Yet come swiftly if I call."
They passed the door and walked on down the steep winding road. Light was growing, and the tall columns and carven figures beside the way went slowly by like grey ghosts. Suddenly the silence was broken, and they heard below them cries and the ringing of swords, such sounds as had not been heard in the hallowed places since the building of the city. At last they came to Rath Dinan, and hastened towards the house of the stewards, looming in the twilight under its great dome.
"Stay, stay!" cried Gandalf, springing forward to the stone stair before the door. "Stay this madness!"
For there were the servants of Denethor with swords and torches in their hands, but alone in the porch upon the topmost step stood Beregond, clad in the black and silver of the guard, and he held the door against them. Two of them had already fallen to his sword, staining the hallows with their blood, and the others cursed him, calling him outlaw and traitor to his master. Even as Gandalf and Pippin ran forward, they heard from within the house of the dead the voice of Denethor crying,
"Haste, haste, do as I have bidden. Slay me this renegade, or must I do so myself?"
Thereupon, the door, which Beregond held shut with his left hand, was wrenched open, and there behind him stood the lord of the city, tall and fell. A light like flame was in his eyes, and he held a drawn sword. But Gandalf sprang up the steps, and the men fell back from him and covered their eyes, for his coming was like the incoming of a white light into a dark place, and he came with great anger. He lifted up his hand, and in the very stroke the sword of Denethor flew up and left his grasp and fell behind him in the shadows of the house, and Denethor stepped backward before Gandalf as one amazed.
"What is this, my lord?" said the wizard. "The houses of the dead are no places for the living, and why do men fight here in the hallows, when there is war enough before the gate? Or has our enemy come even to Rath Dinan?"
"Since when has the lord of Gondor been answerable to thee?" said Denethor. "Or may I not command my own servants?"
"You may," said Gandalf, "but others may contest your will, when it is turned to madness and evil. Where is your son Faramir?"
"He lies within," said Denethor, "burning, already burning. They have set a fire in his flesh, but soon all shall be burned. The west has failed. It shall all go up in a great fire, and all shall be ended. Ash, ash and smoke blown away on the wind."
Then Gandalf, seeing the madness that was on him, feared that he had already done some great evil, and he thrust forward, with Beregond and Pippin behind him, while Denethor gave back until he stood beside the table within. But there they found Faramir, still dreaming in his fever, lying upon the table. Wood was piled under him, and high all about it, and all was drenched with oil, even the garments of Faramir and the coverlets, but as yet no fire had been set to the fuel. Then Gandalf revealed the strength that lay hid in him, even as the light of his power was hidden under his grey mantle. He leapt up onto the faggots, and raising the sick man lightly, he sprang down again and bore him towards the door. But as he did so, Faramir moaned and called on his father in his dream. Denethor started as one waking from a trance, and the flame died in his eyes, And he wept, and he said, "Do not take my son from me. He calls for me."
"He calls," said Gandalf, "but you cannot come to him yet, for he must seek healing on the threshold of death, and maybe find it not, whereas your part is to go out to the battle of your city, where maybe death awaits you. This you know in your heart."
"He will not wake again," said Denethor. "Battle is vain. Why should we wish to live longer? Why should we not go to death side by side?"
"Authority is not given to you, steward of Gondor, to order the hour of your death," answered Gandalf. "And only the heathen kings, under the domination of the Dark Power, did thus, slaying themselves in pride and despair, murdering their kin to ease their own death."
Then, passing through the door, he took Faramir from the deadly house, and laid him on the bier on which he had been brought, and which had now been set in the porch. Denethor followed him, and stood trembling, looking with longing on the face of his son. And for a moment, while all were silent and still, watching the Lord in his throes, he wavered.
"Come," said Gandalf, "we are needed. There is much that you can yet do."
Then suddenly Denethor laughed.
He stood up tall and proud again, and stepping swiftly back to the table, he lifted from it the pillow on which his head had lain. Then, coming to the doorway, he drew aside the covering, and lo! He had between his hands a palantir. And as he held it up, it seemed to those that looked on that the globe began to glow with an inner flame, so that the lean face of the Lord was lit as with a red fire, and it seemed cut out of hard stone, sharp with black shadows, noble, proud, and terrible. His eyes glittered.
"Pride and despair!" he cried. "Didst thou think that the eyes of the White Tower were blind? Nay, I've seen more than thou knowest, grey fool, for thy hope is but ignorance. Go then and labour in the healing. Go forth and fight. Vanity! For a little space you may triumph on the field, for a day, but against the power that now arises there is no victory. To this city only the first finger of its hand has yet been stretched. All the east is moving, and even now the wind of thy hope cheats thee and wafts up Anduin the fleet with black sails. The west has failed. It is time for all to depart who would not be slaves."
"Such counsels will make the enemy's victory certain indeed," said Gandalf.
"Hope on, then," laughed Denethor. "Do I not know thee, Mithrandir? Thy hope is to rule in my stead, to stand behind every throne, north, south, or west. I have read thy mind and its policies. Do I not know that you commanded this halfling here to keep silence? That you brought him hither to be a spy within my very chamber? And yet in our speech together I have learned the names and purpose of all thy companions. So, with the left hand thou wouldst use me for a little while as a shield against Mordor, and with the right bring up this ranger of the north to supplant me. But I say to thee, Gandalf Mithrandir, I will not be thy tool. I am steward of the House of Anarion. I will not step down to be the dotard chamberlain of an upstart. Even were his claim proved to me, still he comes but of the line of Isildur. I will not bow to such a one, last of a ragged house long bereft of lordship and dignity."
"What then would you have?" said Gandalf, "if your will could have its way?"
"I would have things as they were in all the days of my life," answered Denethor, "and in the days of my long fathers before me, to be the lord of this city in peace, and leave my chair to a son after me, who would be his own master and no wizard's pupil. But if doom denies this to me, then I will have naught. Neither life diminished, nor love halved, nor honour abated."
"To me it would not seem that a steward who faithfully surrenders his charge is diminished in love or in honour," said Gandalf.
and at the least you shall not rob your son of his choice while his death is still in doubt." At those words Denethor's eyes flamed again, and taking the stone under his arm, he drew a knife and strode toward the bier. But Beregond sprang forward and set himself before Faramir.
"So," cried Denethor, "thou hadst already stolen half my son's love. Now thou stealest the hearts of my knights also, so that they rob me wholly of my son at the last. But in this at least thou shalt not defy my will to rule my own end. Come hither," he cried to his servants. "Come, if you are not all recreant."
Then two of them ran up the steps to him. Swiftly he snatched a torch from the hand of one and sprang back into the house. Before Gandalf could hinder him, he thrust the brand amid the fuel, and at once it crackled and roared into flame. Then Denethor leapt upon the table, and standing there, wreathed in fire and smoke, he took up the staff of his stewardship that lay at his feet, and broke it on his knee. Casting the pieces into the blaze, he bowed and laid himself on the table, clasping the palantir with both hands upon his breast. And it was said that ever after, if any man looked in that stone, unless he had a great strength of will to turn it to other purpose, he saw only two aged hands withering in flame. Gandalf, in grief and horror, turned his face away and closed the door. For a while he stood in thought, silent upon the threshold, while those outside heard the greedy roaring of the fire within. And then Denethor gave a great cry, and afterwards spoke no more, nor was ever again seen by mortal men.
"So passes Denethor, son of Ecthelion," said Gandalf. Then he turned to Beregond and the Lord's servants that stood there aghast. "And so pass also the days of Gondor that you have known. For good or evil they are ended. Ill deeds have been done here, but let now all enmity that lies between you be put away, for it was contrived by the enemy and works his will. You have been caught in a net of warring duties that you did not weave. But think, you servants of the Lord, blind in your obedience, that but for the treason of Beregond, Faramir, captain of the White Tower, would now also be burned. Bear away from this unhappy place your comrades who have fallen, and we will bear Faramir, steward of Gondor, to a place where he can sleep in peace, or die if that be his doom." Then Gandalf and Beregond, taking up the bier, bore it away towards the Houses of Healing, while behind them walked Pippin with downcast head. But the servants of the Lord stood gazing as stricken men at the house of the dead. And even as Gandalf came to the end of Rath-Dinan, there was a great noise. Looking back, they saw the dome of the house crack, and smokes issue forth. And then, with a rush and rumble of stone, it fell in a flurry of fire, but still unabated the flames danced and flickered amongst the ruins. Then in terror the servants fled and followed Gandalf. At length they came to the steward's door, and Beregond looked with grief at the porter. "This deed I shall ever rue," he said. "But a madness of haste was on me, and he would not listen, but drew sword against me." Then, taking the key that he had wrested from the slain man, he closed the door and locked it. "This should now be given to the Lord Faramir," he said. "The Prince of Dol Amroth is in command in the absence of the Lord," said Gandalf. "But since he is not here, I must take this on myself. I bid you keep the key and guard it until the city is set in order again." Now at last they passed into the high circles of the city, and in the light of morning they went their way towards the Houses of Healing. And these were fair houses set apart for the care of those who were grievously sick. But now they were prepared for the tending of men hurt in battle or dying. They stood not far from the citadel gate, in the sixth circle, nigh to its southward wall, and about them was a garden, and a greensward with trees, the only such place in the city.
There dwelt the few women that had been permitted to remain in Minas Tirith, since they were skilled in healing or in the service of the healers. But even as Gandalf and his companions came carrying the bier to the main door of the houses, they heard a great cry that went up from the field before the gate, and rising shrill and piercing into the sky passed, and died away on the wind. So terrible was the cry that for a moment all stood still, and yet when it had passed, suddenly their hearts were lifted up in such a hope as they had not known since the darkness came out of the east. And it seemed to them that the light grew clear and the sun broke through the clouds. But Gandalf's face was grave and sad, and bidding Beregond and Pippin to take Faramir into the houses of healing, he went up on to the walls nearby. And there, like a figure carven in white, he stood in the new sun and looked out. And he beheld, with the sight that was given to him, all that had befallen. And when Éomer rode out from the forefront of his battle, and stood beside those who lay upon the field, he sighed, and he cast his cloak about him again, and went from the walls. And Beregond and Pippin found him standing in thought before the door of the houses when they came out. They looked at him, and for a while he was silent. At last he spoke.
"My friends," he said, "and all you people of this city and of the western land, and things of great sorrow and renown have come to pass. Shall we weep or be glad? Beyond hope the captain of our foes has been destroyed, and you had the of his last despair. But he has not gone without woe and bitter loss, and I might have averted, but for the madness of Denethor. So long has the reach of our enemy become, alas! Now I perceive how his will was able to enter the very heart of the city. Though the stewards deemed that it was a secret kept only by those, long ago I guessed that here in the White Tower one at least of the seven seeing stones was preserved. In the days A's wisdom, Thor did not presume to use it, nor to challenge Sauron, knowing the limits of his own strength. But his wisdom failed, and I fear that as the peril of his realm grew, he looked in the stone and was deceived. Far too often, I guess, since Boromir departed. He was too great to be subdued to the will of the Dark Power. He saw nonetheless only those things which the Power permitted him to see. The knowledge which he obtained was, doubtless, often of service to him. Yet the vision of the great might of Mordor that was shown to him fed the despair of his heart until it overthrew his mind."
"Now I understand what seemed so strange to me," said Pippin, shuddering at his memories as he spoke. "The Lord went away from the room where Faramir lay, and it was only when he returned that I first thought he was changed, old and broken."
"It was in the very hour that Faramir was brought to the tower that many of us saw a strange light in the topmost chamber," said Beregond. "But we have seen that light before, and it has long been rumoured in the city that the Lord would at times wrestle in thought with his enemy."
"Alas, then I have guessed rightly," said Gandalf. "Thus the will of Sauron entered into Minas Tirith, and thus I have been delayed here, and here I shall still be forced to remain, for I shall soon have other charges, not Faramir only. Now I must go down to meet those who come. I have seen a sight upon the field that is very grievous to my heart, and greater sorrow may yet come to pass. Come with me, Pippin, but you, Beregond, should return to the citadel and tell the chief of the guard there what has befallen. It will be his duty, I fear, to withdraw you from the guard, but say to him that, if I may give him counsel, you should be sent to the houses of healing, to be the guard and servant of your captain, and to be at his side when he awakes, if that shall ever be again. For by you he was saved from the fire. Go now, I shall return soon." With that he turned away, and went with Pippin down towards the lower city. And even as they hastened on their way, the wind brought a grey rain, and all the fires sank, and there arose a great smoke before them.
Chapter 8. THE HOUSES OF HEALING. A mist was in Merry's eyes of tears and weariness when they drew near the ruined gate of Minas Tirith. He gave little heed to the wreck and slaughter that lay about all. Fire and smoke and stench was in the air, for many engines had been cast into the fire pits, and many of the slain also, while here and there lay many carcasses of the great Southron monsters, half burned, or broken by stone cast, or shot through the eyes by the valiant archers of Morthond. The flying rain had ceased for a time, and the sun gleamed up above, but all the lower city was still wrapped in a smouldering reek. Already men were labouring to clear a way through the jetsam of battle, and now out from the gate came some bearing litters. Gently they laid Eowyn upon soft pillows, but the king's body they covered with a great cloth of gold, and they bore torches about him, and their flames, pale in the sunlight, were fluttered by the wind. So Théoden and Eowyn came to the city of Gondor, and all who saw them bared their heads and bowed. And they passed through the ash and fume of the burned circle, and went on and up along the streets of stone. To Merry the ascent seemed age-long, a meaningless journey in a hateful dream, going on and on to some dim ending that memory cannot seize. Slowly the lights of the torches in front of him flickered and went out, and he was walking in a darkness, and he thought, "This is a tunnel leading to a tomb. There we shall stay forever." But suddenly into his dream there fell a living voice. "Well, Merry, thank goodness I've found you." He looked up, and the mist before his eyes cleared a little. There was Pippin. They were face to face in a narrow lane, and but for themselves it was empty. He rubbed his eyes. "Where's the king?" he said. "And Eowyn?" Then he stumbled and sat down on a doorstep and began to weep again. "They've gone up into the citadel," said Pippin. "I think you must have fallen asleep on your feet and taken the wrong turning. When we found that you were not with them, Gandalf sent me to look for you. Poor old Merry! How glad I am to see you again! But you're worn out, and I won't bother you with any talk. But tell me, are you hurt or wounded?" "No," said Merry. "Well, no, I don't think so. But I can't use my right arm, Pippin, not since I stabbed him. And my sword burned all the way like a piece of wood." Pippin's face was anxious. "Well, you'd better come with me as quick as you can," he said. "I wish I could carry you. You aren't fit to walk any further. They shouldn't have let you walk at all. But you must forgive them. So many dreadful things have happened in the city, Merry, that one poor hobbit coming in from the battle is easily overlooked."
"It's not always a misfortune being overlooked," said Merry. "I was overlooked just now by—" "No, no, I can't speak of it. Help me, Pippin. It's all going dark again. My arm is so cold."
"Lean on me, Merry lad," said Pippin. "Come now, foot by foot. It's not far."
"Are you going to bury me?" said Merry.
"No, indeed," said Pippin,
trying to sound cheerful, though his heart was wrung with fear and pity.
"No, we're going to the Houses of Healing."
They turned out of the lane that ran between tall houses and the outer wall of the fourth circle, and they regained the main street climbing up to the citadel. Step by step they went, while Merry swayed and murmured as one in sleep.
"I'll never get him there," thought Pippin. "Is there no one to help me? I can't leave him here."
Just then, to his surprise, a boy came running up behind, and as he passed he recognized Birgil, Beregond's son.
"Hello, Birgil," he called. "Where are you going? Glad to see you again, and still alive."
"I'm running errands for the healers," said Birgil. "I can't stay."
"Don't," said Pippin, "but tell them up there that I have a sick hobbit, a Parian, mind you, come from the battlefield. I don't think he can walk so far. If Mithrandir is there, he'll be glad of the message."
Birgil ran on.
"I'd better wait here," thought Pippin.
So he let Merry sink gently down onto the pavement in a patch of sunlight, and then he sat down beside him, laying Merry's head in his lap. He felt his body and limbs gently,
and took his friend's hands in his own. The right hand felt icy to the touch. It was not long before Gandalf himself came in search of them. He stooped over Merry and caressed his brow. Then he lifted him carefully.
"He should have been born in honour into this city," he said. "He has well repaid my trust, for if Elrond had not yielded to me, neither of you would have set out, and then far more grievous would the evils of this day have been." He sighed. "And yet here is another charge on my hands, while all the time the battle hangs in the balance."
So at last Faramir and Eowyn and Meriadoc were laid in beds in the Houses of Healing. And there they were tended well. For though all lore was in these latter days fallen from its fullness of old, the leechcraft of Gondor was still wise and skilled in the healing of wound and hurt, and all such sickness as east of the sea mortal men were subject to. Save old age only. For that they had found no cure. And indeed the span of their lives had now waned to little more than that of other men, and those among them who passed the tale of 50 years with vigour were grown few, save in some houses of purer blood. But now their art and knowledge were baffled, for there were many sick of a malady that would not be healed, and they called it the Black Shadow, for it came from the Nazgul, and those who were stricken with it fell slowly into an ever deeper dream, and then passed to silence and a deadly cold, and so died. And it seemed to the tenders of the sick that on the halfling and on the Lady of Rohan this malady lay heavily. Still at whiles as the morning wore away, they would speak, murmuring in their dreams, and the watchers listened to all that they said, hoping perhaps to learn something that would help them to understand their hurts. But soon they began to fall down into the darkness, and as the sun turned west, a grey shadow crept over their faces. But Faramir burned with a fever that would not abate. Gandalf went from one to the other, full of care, and he was told all that the watchers could hear. And so the day passed, while the great battle outside went on with shifting hopes and strange tidings, and still Gandalf waited and watched and did not go forth, till at last the red sunset filled all the sky, and the light through the windows fell on the grey faces of the sick. Then it seemed to those who stood by that in the glow the faces flushed softly, as with health returning, but it was only a mockery of hope. Then an old wife, Eorith, the eldest of the women who served in that house, looking on the fair face of Faramir, wept, for all the people loved him. And she said, "Alas, if he should die! Would that there were kings in Gondor, as there were once upon a time, they say. For it is said in old lore, the hands of the king are the hands of a healer, and so the rightful king could ever be known." And Gandalf, who stood by, said, "Men may long remember your words, Eorith, for there is hope in them. Maybe a king has indeed returned to Gondor, or have you not heard the strange tidings that have come to the city? I've been too busy with this and that to heed all the crying and shouting," she answered. "All I hope is that those murdering devils do not come to this house and trouble the sick." Then Gandalf went out in haste, and already the fire in the sky was burning out, and the smouldering hills were fading, while ash-grey evening crept over the fields. Now as the sun went down, Aragorn and Éomer and Imrahil drew near the city with their captains and knights. And when they came before the gate, Aragorn said,
"Behold the sun setting in a great fire. It's a sign of the end and fall of many things, and a change in the tides of the world. But this city and realm has rested in the charge of the stewards for many long years, and I fear that if I enter it unbidden, then doubt and debate may arise, which should not be while this war is fought. I will not enter it, nor make any claim, until it be seen whether we or Mordor shall prevail. Men shall pitch my tents upon the field, and here I will await the welcome of the lord of the city." But Éomer said, "Already you have raised the banner of the kings and displayed the tokens of Elendil's house. Will you suffer these to be challenged?" "No,"
said Aragorn. "But I deem the time unripe, and I have no mind for strife except with our enemy and his servants." And the Prince Imrahil said, "Your words, Lord, are wise, if one who is a kinsman of the Lord Denethor may counsel you in this matter. He is strong-willed and proud, but old, and his mood has been strange since his son was stricken down. Yet I would not have you remain like a beggar at the door."
"Not a beggar," said Aragorn. "Say a captain of the rangers, who are unused to cities and houses of stone." And he commanded that his banner should be furled, and he did off the star of the North Kingdom, and gave it to the keeping of the sons of Elrond.
This ends Disc 5.